Good afternoon. I'll call this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order and note that we do have a quorum present. Would anyone care to move the minutes for Wednesday, April 8th?
So moved.
Co-Chair Igo moves the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. We just have one bill on the calendar. It's this committee's finance and policy bill that we're going to send out. I'm going to be presenting the bill, and I want to hand the gavel off to my co-chair, Spencer Igo, to chair this hearing as we pass, hopefully, this bill that we worked on very closely together. Chair Howard, I'll let you move your bill in front of the committee. I will move House File 1141 and make the motion to re-refer this bill to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right, the bill is before us. We'll move to amendments. Looks like first up we have the DE2 amendment.
Yes, I would love to move the DE2 amendment. I can describe it in more detail once we do a few of these housekeeping items.
Sounds good. With that, then we'll move into the A1 amendment to the DE2.
All right. Let me get my amendment straight here. Members, the A1 amendment would delete a section of the bill that is a tax provision that we hope can be carried in a tax bill.
Any member discussion? All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
And actually, now that I'm thinking about this, maybe I should just walk through the bill and then we could do the rest of these amendments.
We can revert back, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Let's go to the DE2. Now, as amended, you can walk through the bill.
Okay. Members, first I want to start with some thank yous. First, thank you to my co-chair, Igo, for our work over these 2 years, but on this bill in particular, to be able to do a lot of good work here. And all the more thank yous at the end of, but want to just really call out our amazing nonpartisan staff, Katrina Highmark and Justin Cope, for their work on this bill, as well as our partisan staff on each side of the aisle. And then all of our members of the committee that whose testimony and discussion, I think, really led to a strong bipartisan bill. And that's what this is. It's a really good bill that will do a lot of good for Minnesotans. It's a testament to how we've worked together in this committee to focus on what are our shared goals of addressing our housing shortage and making sure that Minnesotans have the best chance to have a safe and stable home where they can thrive. And, you know, we consider this bill amidst a murkier budget picture. You know, the state has a current surplus, but murkier times ahead. And at that same time, we know that Minnesotans face significant challenges right now today. You know, eviction rates are increasing across the state. We all know of our immense housing shortage that's raising costs for folks. We have a challenge in greater Minnesota, and particularly workforce housing. And so it would seem that this juxtaposition, this challenging budget setting in this tied legislature, balanced against these immense needs, would make it difficult for this committee, you know, in divided government no less, to make headway, to improve lives, to make housing more affordable. But that is it, precisely what this bill accomplishes. We've walked a tightrope, really, to balance the needs of the present with the needs of the future and have a bill that will make a real difference all across the state, while remaining budget neutrality for this fiscal year and the next biennium as well. So I want to go over the highlights of this bill. First, the bill authorizes $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds, our state's bread and butter tool to build housing to own, to rent, all across the state. This infusion will help keep our pipeline moving forward, investing in shovel-ready projects that leverage both public and private dollars. It will create more than 1,000 homes all across the state. We're also investing $20 million in the Greater Minnesota Workforce Program, a priority of co-chair Igo and a Representative Norris bill, something I support as well. This will help us build workforce housing in greater Minnesota at a time when that need is great. And we just heard testimony on this last week that talked about how public investment can be the key to unlock new homes. The bill also includes $150,000 investment in HECAT for home ownership counseling, as well as $150,000 pilot project, Representative Zalesnikar proposal regarding senior housing. These investments are cost neutral, as I mentioned. The bill also includes money for rental assistance and housing assistance. This committee has discussed this issue previously. A previous proposal directed $35 to $40 million from the Tyler settlement for rental assistance. This bill does direct Tyler money, but not in the same way in the bill we discussed earlier this session. Rather than create a new program, we are utilizing our existing FHP AP program with direction for resources to go to existing FHP AP providers to deliver housing assistance. So what that means is our counties, our trusted social service providers that have been doing this for years and years, in all 87 counties that have that strong track record, will get these dollars, and we know the needs are there all across the state. They'll be put to good use. As a reminder, this Tyler settlement, if the legislature doesn't act, those are resources that would cancel back to the general fund. Our bill ensures that all claims will be filled and that the rest will be used for FHPAP. As we discussed earlier this session, you know, given the history of this fund and how it where it came from related to housing stability, this is a really common sense budget-wise way to ensure that existing programs are used to support communities and families. I mentioned some of the other investments. I want to say a word on how they're funded. This bill, both for the next fiscal year for housing infrastructure bonds and for the other spending that I mentioned, is cost neutral because we're redirecting investment earnings from legislative programs within Minnesota Housing, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And so a word on this, you know, we did have a hearing on this subject to get some information on where things sit. We recognize that this is the first time that the legislature has directed interest earnings in this way, but I would note this is the first time the agency has accrued such a large amount of these interest earnings. And there are interest earnings on legislative appropriations, things that this legislature thought made sense to fund. Currently the agency has north of $80 million in these earnings. And we believe using $22 million that will unlock $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds, the $20 million investment in greater Minnesota workforce housing represents a judicious use of public tax dollars while ensuring providing assurances that the agency can continue to use the interest earnings to support the staff and implement these programs. We believe that we can accomplish both of these things, these goals together. Along this line, the bill also includes some fiscal policy items. Co-Chair Igo, I mentioned, held a hearing last week where we discussed some of these under-the-hood issues with Minnesota Housing Finance Authority, and I appreciated their willingness to be frank with us on that discussion. In part, reflecting some of that feedback from members, we have several provisions included. One that would include more oversight. So, requiring MHFA to add a little more specificity in the reporting to the legislature on when they're transferring funds between programs, and to give just the legislature a little better line of sight about their fiscal processes. We're also tightening the statute regarding legislative appropriations and where they can and cannot be used. MHFA has said that they do not use legislative appropriations on their banking side. We have some statutes that make it a little murky if they have that ability or not, and so we are just making clear in statute that legislative appropriations cannot be used on the banking side. We're also allowing more dollars to reach people. With a provision that would related to administrative costs and saying that if the MHFA has investment earnings sufficient to cover administrative costs, utilize those funds so that we can keep the whole of legislative appropriations for those programs. And lastly, we have a provision that would allow us to put state dollars back into programs to serve Minnesotans on a more regular basis. This is related to those investment earnings. We have a provision that directs MHFA to return interest earned on state appropriations on a yearly basis into similar programs if they are collecting interest in excess of what they will need to cover operations and staffing. I want to be clear on all of these proposals. It's our goal to ensure that we can judiciously use tax dollars, meet goals, and also make sure that MHFA has the ability to operate good, sound programs. As you've mentioned, Co-Chair Igo, MHFA is an agency where we haven't seen fraud issues. They take program integrity seriously. We want to make sure that continues, and that's our goal, and we look forward to more discussions to ensure that we hit that mark. And so that is in broad strokes. There are a few other provisions from the agency policy bill in this bill, including that lived experiences piece that we talked about. But those are the broad strokes. And I think I'll stop there. And maybe we can proceed to amendments and then go to questions and testimony.
Thank you for the walkthrough, Chair Howard. I'll make my comments on the bill a little later, but couldn't agree with more of what you're saying. Since we've already adopted the A1 amendment, we are going to move to the A4 amendment. So, Chair Howard, you have the A4 amendment to the DE2. I will move in front of the committee. Will you briefly describe the amendment?
The A4 amendment, members, is with that lived experiences provision I mentioned, there were some discussions between DHS and MHFA, and those discussions have led the agencies to request that this line be deleted.
Any discussion to the A4 amendment to the DE2? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The A4 to the DE2 is adopted. The next amendment is the A2 amendment. Representative Norris, I believe that's you. You have the A2 amendment to the DE2. I'll move it into the front of the committee. Will you please briefly describe the amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Igo. That is my amendment. Was expecting that we would do it after public testimony, but we can do it now, although I would prefer if there's an opportunity to ask some questions of the agency on the record about the amendment. But
Representative Norris, unfortunately, with so many test fires that we have today and the time that we have, we're just going to have to move the amendments right now, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Chair Igo. Yes, the A2 amendment is an amendment I'm bringing forward, which would dedicate $15 million from the proceeds of the housing infrastructure bonds, specifically for acquisition of manufactured home parks and manufactured home park improvements, along with infrastructure improvements. This amendment is the result of, I'll be candid, some frustration that I and other legislators have with how the agency has made decisions about how to use the HIBs, the housing infrastructure bonds, in the past. The legislature has made numerous requests of the agency to prioritize preservation of manufactured home park communities, and we've been disappointed that the agency has not chosen to use resources for that purpose unless provided by the legislature specifically for that purpose. We have in the past expressed that when we approve large amounts of housing infrastructure bonds, like we're doing once again in this bill, that some of that is directed toward manufactured home parks and opportunities to make improvements, infrastructure improvements, and we have not seen the agency follow through on that. And so that is the reason why I'm bringing this amendment forward today, is to express our intent that we expect that if this bill ultimately passes and $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds get approved, that a substantial portion of that would go toward manufactured home park improvements and infrastructure improvements. Thank you, Chair Igoe.
We'll go to the bill author, Co-Chair Howard, for any comments on the A2 amendment.
Co-Chair Igoe, Representative Norris. I absolutely understand the desire to see more resources go to manufactured housing. It's a critical need all across the state. As we've discussed in this committee, it's the number one source of affordable home ownership. I do think going down the path of earmarking, there's reasons why we shouldn't do that. But if we continue to see the result, like last year, where no resources went to manufactured housing, I start to understand why these proposals come forward. And so I guess that's what I would say is, and I would say that at $100 million, this is why we need to make significant investments in HIBs, because that makes it easier with the immense needs across the housing continuum to have a little bit more of a balanced approach. And so, I certainly would hope with $100 million investment, we'd see investments in manufactured housing at that level.
All right, next on my list, I have Representative Johnson.
Thanks, Co-Chair Igoe. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this forward. Thank you, Representative Howard, Co-Chair Howard, for bringing the bill forward. Thank you for this amendment. When I saw that it was going to be in here, I thought, great, because I know there has been frustration going back as far as housing, using the funds for manufactured housing, and as we know, it would be a great tool to address some of the challenges and help the smaller operations deal with the infrastructure issue going forward. So I understand the lack of desire to start earmarking. Totally get that. I would just like to see a dedication that hasn't been shown from Minnesota Housing yet to recognize that this is housing. It's the most affordable version of housing. And this is one of the best ways that you can start showing that commitment to those who are in that housing, is by going forward and dedicating that money to use it for this purpose. So again, thank you for bringing it up. I understand the reason for withdrawing and you don't want to go down that road of earmarking, but I just hope that starting next year, we start seeing that dedication from Minnesota Housing in recognizing those individuals. So thank you. Thank you.
I'll just make a few comments as well before I go back to you, Representative Norris. Similar to my co-chair and other comments that have been made, I think the most imperative thing about this is that if we start earmarking HIBs, before you know it, this committee would start having its a bonding bill that we would be able to start appropriating projects, and that would hurt HIBs in the long run. But I think the comments today, in a bipartisan way, by this committee, and I know the agency sitting in here listening to this, and we'll have more time to testify today, could lead to good further discussions and lead fruit that we get investments in the right ways. So with that, I'll go to any closing comments by you, Representative Norris.
Thanks, Chair Igoe, and thanks to you for your comments, Chair Howard for your comments, Representative Johnson as well. I appreciate the bipartisan support for making sure that manufactured housing is prioritized and how these housing infrastructure bonds are used. Your concerns about earmarks and going down that road is well taken. So I am going to withdraw the A2 amendment, but hopefully we've put on the record the strong bipartisan support for this, and I'm hopeful that we'll see that reflected in the agency's actions as well. Thank you.
Representative Norris withdraws the A3 amendment, or A2, excuse me, A2 amendment. Next is the A3 amendment, which I have the A3 amendment to the DE2, and I'll move it in front of the committee. The A3 amendment is a very straightforward amendment to get at something that I think most in this committee are going to agree with and most taxpayers would agree with. When we are seeing things around housing production, we're seeing cities make decisions to put moratoriums on the building of new homes. It came to me that we need to make sure and say, well, if that's going to be the case in a housing crisis, taxpayer dollars should not be awarded to cities in the forms of LAHA and SAHA funding. So it's local affordable housing aid and state affordable housing aid. And it's just a straightforward way to say, if we are going to prohibit growth in a housing crisis and hurt the people of Minnesota more, you should not benefit from taxpayer dollars. That is the amendment. I'll go to Chair Howard for comments to the amendment.
Thank you, Coach Iago, for the amendment. I support it. As the author of the original author of local affordable housing aid and state affordable housing aid, the intent of that resource that we provide to cities and to counties, considerable amounts of resources to cities and counties, the intent is to use that resource largely to build homes that are affordable that meet community needs. If a city is going to have a moratorium where they're saying we're not going to build any new homes, which a city in the metro area has said that they plan to do, then you shouldn't receive state resources for the express purpose of building homes if you're not going to be engaged in that kind of activity. So it's a pretty straightforward amendment. I would support it. There's a question, of course, of where this should live in a housing bill or in a tax bill, but it's straightforward, and I can't see any reason not to, for members not to support it.
Any further discussion to the A3 amendment? I'll make some closing comments. Similar to that, Co-Chair Howard, I was looking at and thinking about the fact that this would be a tax provision and is not to give the Senate any crazy ideas when we send them this bill in a few short weeks. We should make sure to keep all tax provisions out. So I will be withdrawing this amendment today, but it does send a good message to the folks in Minnesota that we need to continue to address the housing crisis, and the taxpayers are not going to fund local units of government that are going to prohibit that from happening. So I will withdraw the A3 amendment. With that, that is all of our amendments. Chair Howard, we are to the adoption of the DE2. Do you have any additional comments?
I think we can go to testifiers.
All right. Chair Howard will move the DE2 as amended for the committee, and we'll move the testifiers. First on my list will be, or do I have? Yeah, I was going to say, I think we should fully adopt the DE2 now because we've been doing as amended. So is there any discussion now as we've fully amended the DE2? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the DE2 as amended is adopted. Now we'll move into testifiers. First on my list will be Commissioner Ho. And then on deck will be Ann's Smetic.
Care which side of you are?
No, you can, wherever you're most comfortable.
Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Argo and members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Ho, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the DE amendment today. We're still working to fully understand the proposed language and the potential implications, which we look forward to discussing in greater detail in the coming weeks. We are grateful for the strong working relationship we've had with this committee over the past several years, and we appreciate that we can share with you our successes and that you come to us when you want to understand more about how we operate. I want to make a few initial observations. Our agency remains dedicated to following the law and wise stewardship of precious taxpayer resources. Our staff are committed to excellence. None of that has changed. What has changed is the anomaly of a large infusion of one-time dollars in one-time programs in 2023, 2024, and 2025. The governor agrees with each of you that the housing needs are pressing throughout the state. That's why he's recommending $100 million. And we're committed to working with you to find solutions that are within our power and that don't jeopardize the long-term fiscal health of the agency and its mission. We're in agreement on investments in the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. This program needs more resources to help renters and rental property owners pay their bills. The governor also recommended $34 million for Homeownership Assistance Fund because we know we need more down payment assistance to help more Minnesotans get into their first home. The governor has recommended $33 million for strengthening supportive housing because permanent supportive housing has unique costs and challenges facing the industry, especially in light of federal policy shifts. We're most concerned about the proposed transfer of funds out of agency accounts. Transferring agency resources would have some potentially unintended consequences that I want to raise. As many of you know, Minnesota Housing works with a lot of investors who help the agency's nationwide lending activities. We're a Minnesota business, I promise. Our nation-leading lending activities. We also are separately rated by Moody's and Standard & Poor's. This type of transfer would create a responsibility to notify the rating agencies and investors. Investors are sensitive to changes that could impact the long-term stability and operations of the agency. The removal of interest accruals from the Housing Development Fund by the legislature would raise a lot of questions about the agency's autonomy and ability to pay for staff and operations, especially since statutory language is clear that control of the resources has been provided to the agency. Several of the elements here represent significant restructuring of the operation of an agency that is one of the leaders in the nation. And I'm uncomfortable making changes that we've not had time to thoroughly vet that would undermine our ability to meet our mission. We're happy to work with you on solutions that address your concerns and don't compromise agency and program integrity. Beyond this committee, it's not clear whether after this session, state agencies will have more responsibilities related to grants management and compliance, not to mention more resources to do the work. What is clear is that program integrity is perhaps the most pressing issue facing state government. If the interest-related restrictions and redirection in this bill become law, Minnesota Housing will have fewer resources in the coming years to ensure that the 30 new programs and named grantees handed to us by the legislature will receive the level of oversight we're used to providing. We cannot compromise on program integrity. I know you've all heard me say this many times before. I have the honor of leading one of the highest performing state housing finance agencies in the country. The relationship that we maintain with the legislature is such an important reason for our reach and our impact. You've afforded us a level of trust, autonomy, and support that is the envy of every one of my counterparts at other state housing finance agencies. Our partnership has allowed us to flourish in our unique role that balances markets and mission. This bill has the potential to undermine so much of what the legislature and the agency have built together over 5 decades. Lastly, there are several changes related to state appropriated programs, their interest earnings, and reporting on the agency's activities. There are timing considerations in some of the language that we'd like to talk through. I'd appreciate, though, the opportunity to work through my comments, and I look forward to working on the bill together in the final weeks of session. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hall. We do have a few member questions. First on my list will be Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Ho, you just said something that popped into my mind. I kind of snapped up. You said that you don't want the deduction that's coming out of this bill to impact your ability to staff and run your office. But this money that's coming out of it is from the $99.6 million of interest that we talked about last week. You cannot have a reliable source of staffing money coming from interest that may go up and down or may not be reliable or programmable. So to say that is exceptionally disingenuous, because you're not really able, from a good government's perspective and even an accounting perspective, say we know that we'll have X number of dollars so we can staff. Interest doesn't work that way. If you spend down the tranche of money, you're going to have less interest. So to say that is unbelievably disingenuous for our committee to hear today, because, again, if I have $99.6 million today, doesn't mean that I'm going to have that moving forward, because that's an interest tranche of money. You get an operating adjustment where you then get to hire people from, and that's done in omnibus bills and the finance bills at the beginning of every first year of the biennium. But you cannot reliably say that, oh, we won't be able to staff moving forward based on the loss of an interest tranche of money. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair, Commissioner Hill. Representative Nash, I think I'm confused by your comment, because the agency does not receive an operating adjustment.
Chair Howard?
Co-Chair Igo, Representative Ash, it is true that, you know, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is different than other state agencies. We don't get fiscal notes because they are funding staff, you know, internally. Before the 2023 budget, they were using banking operations, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner, and interest
in fees on programs.
I would agree that the level of investment would allow us to continue to have that program integrity, but I appreciate the comments and know that we have work to do together on this.
Next on my list is Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Igo and Commissioner Ho. It's good to see you. Thanks for being here. I had a couple of questions I was hoping to ask, but in the interest of time, I'll skip the ones that are looking backward and instead focus on the one looking forward. I think you were here for the conversation we just had about the manufactured housing and being prioritized in the use of housing infrastructure bonds. If this committee goes ahead and approves housing infrastructure bonds, and assuming those ultimately get passed into law by the end of this session, will there be an RFP for the Manufactured Home Community Redevelopment Program in 2026? And will a portion of those housing infrastructure bonds that we approve be used for that program?
Commissioner.
Chair Igo and Representative Norris, thank you for the opportunity to speak to that. There will be an RFP for manufactured home communities even if the legislature does not authorize housing infrastructure bonds last year. Because of the low amount of the appropriated amount, we made a decision last year not to do an annual RFP, but to do an every other year RFP. But we did reserve housing infrastructure bonds from the last authorization to put towards that RFP. I did look back when I heard your comments. We have already put over $7 million of housing infrastructure bonds into manufactured home community infrastructure through previous RFP rounds, and our intent is to continue to do that going forward when they're available, in addition to the appropriated amount. It's just the timing of what's the most efficient for the communities and the agency in terms of how often we run an RFP.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and thank you, Commissioner Ho. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
And just one final closing comment from me, Commissioner. I look forward to working together on this and figuring out this budget together. However, I think when we talk about the funding of the agency with the interest, but then you also talk about investors with the interest, it sounds like it's already being earmarked in some shape or form. So I think there is going to be some negotiation there to figure this all out. But I think there's going to be plenty of money left aside, and that's both Chair Howard and I spent a lot of time looking at your budget and working this out to find a way. So I'm looking forward to making sure we can recapture this interest earnings and put them into programs that are going to build more housing in the state. So, but I appreciate you being here and your testimony, and looking forward to working together in the process.
Chair Igo, if I may.
Absolutely.
I just want to clarify. We are not using any interest earnings on appropriations for investors in bonds that finance the bank side of the organization. None of the interest earnings on the appropriations go towards anything on the banking side of the organization. To the extent that the interest earnings are being held, they're being held to pay for the 7-year cost of operating the appropriated programs. And to the extent that Representative Nash is completely right, that as the program expenditures continue and at such time as interest rates come down, the earnings on and the appropriations are expended, so there's less money, unpredictable interest rates. So the peak of interest earnings has already occurred, but the bulk of the oversight and administration of the programs is just beginning. And that is why we believe that it's important to hold on to the interest earnings from the period of time before funds were expended, when interest rates happened to be high, to pay for the 7-year costs of administering the programs, which includes, you know, getting the contracts established up to a 5-year period of grants, and then grant closeout, compliance, and audit.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next on the list will be Ann Smetick. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Igo, Chair Howard. My name is Ann Smedic. I'm director and senior counsel with the Housing Justice Center. I'm testifying today to ask this committee to include funds for supportive housing in HF1141. I testified before you earlier in the session about the continuum of care system and the ways in which it was battered by unexpected federal funding volatility. I thank this committee for hearing and acting upon those concerns. I'm back before you today to say unequivocally the COC system is continuing to navigate this volatility, that the threats remain severe, and that the path forward is riddled with unknowns. As you know, continuum of care properties were relying on annual federal grants to be renewed starting in January of this year. Instead, HUD drastically reversed course with a new fiscal year 25 funding notice, which changed funding structures and posed new priorities without time to adjust. That funding notice was challenged with multiple lawsuits that are ongoing. As pressures grew in early 2026, a bipartisan Congress directed HUD to renew quarter one grants through an appropriations bill and set rolling deadlines to take further action. HUD announced weeks ago it would renew quarter one grants, those that started expiring back in January of this year, but those grantees have received no grant agreements, no indication of when funds may actually be available. Quarter two grantees have heard nothing on renewals, and quarter three and quarter four remain mired in uncertainty. We're anticipating both rulings and appeals in the lawsuits that will change the path forward. And while all of that is happening, HUD is expected to issue a new fiscal year 26 funding notice by June that will likely include a new set of requirements and may lead to new lawsuits and further complications. The entire continuum of care system in Minnesota is balancing spinning plates while it tries to navigate which funding may be provided and when, which lawsuit may be resolved and how and when HUD will draw future funding lines. Meanwhile, these crucial supportive housing properties are simply trying to survive and continue serving Minnesotans in need. I encourage this committee to support funding for supportive housing for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list will be Christine Davis. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Igo and members of the committee, my name is Christine Davis, Executive Director of Hearth Connection, a nonprofit working statewide to strengthen supportive housing and long-term solutions to homelessness. 2 months ago, I presented on Minnesota's homeless response system and the 200 projects awarded $50 million annually through federal homeless assistance grants, including supportive housing for more than 5,000 people in over 3,000 units across every region of the state. Today, I'm here because the situation is more uncertain and action this session is urgently needed for additional funding for the homeless response system and supportive housing, or we face real consequences in every region. We are grateful for recent bipartisan action to direct $9 million in unspent state funds as emergency support that, if administered according to intent, will help stabilize the system for now through October. After that, providers will be forced to reduce or close programs. Those most harmed will be people with the highest needs, verified disabilities, longest histories of homelessness, older adults, youth, and families with children who will lose stable housing just as winter approaches, with no legislative remedy available for months. Without supportive housing, many will return to homelessness, demand for public assistance and emergency shelter will spike, emergency and institutional health care use will grow, and costs will rise. Consequences ripple. The properties built with significant bipartisan public and private investment will destabilize. Emergency response and compliance systems erode. Our ability to track results and ensure accountability diminish. We must not undermine 2 decades of proven multi-sector solutions and allow harm to people, public systems, and community health across Minnesota. I urge you to support additional funding for supportive housing to prevent that harm. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Courtney Schaff. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and start with your testimony.
Co-Chair Igo, Co-Chair Howard, members of the committee, my name is Courtney Schaff. I serve as policy manager for the Minnesota Housing Partnership. MHP drives innovative housing solutions through original research, expert community development support, and advocacy for the policies that ensure everyone has a place to call home. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 1141, in particular the need for increased support for the Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program and Permanent Supportive Housing. Minnesota families across the state are feeling the financial pressure. The word affordability has been top of mind this session as costs rise and budgets tighten. We consider housing to be affordable when a household spends 30% or less of their income on housing costs. Any more than that, and a household is considered to be cost burdened, which is the unfortunate reality for 640,000 Minnesotans across the state. When a family is cost burdened, there is less for the daily necessities like groceries and gas, let alone to put away for savings. When an unexpected car repair or medical bill could mean greater vulnerability to housing instability, it's these situations that direct financial assistance through FHPAP can help to stabilize a household. FHPAP is a proven statewide program delivered through trusted partners with flexible assistance that matches the individual's need with the average support at about $3,600. We support the commitment as represented in the DE2 to find creative solutions to help address the significant need for financial assistance across the state. In addition, MHP supports funding for supportive housing services, which are critical to preventing homelessness for some of our most vulnerable residents. Thank you for the committee's thoughtful work this session and for your consideration today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Babette Jamison Varner. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Babette Jamison Varner, Vice President of Supportive Housing at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. I am here to support the investment in supportive housing and FHPAP in this budget bill. Both are critical to our state right now and must be passed. The cost of inaction would be great. Supportive housing is the backbone of Minnesota's response to homelessness. As VP of Supportive Housing, I work closely with partners and residents, and I see transformational impact. Young parents, seniors, and children are finding a place to call home. This is not just happening at Beacon. Tens and thousands of people statewide are experiencing this transformation. They no longer rely on emergency rooms or shelters as a safe place. They can go home. Supportive housing providers are ending homelessness every day, but all of that is threatened right now. Leaders of homelessness prevention and affordable housing programs enhanced with services are now contemplating their future as federal funding continues to be uncertain. Minnesota has a fragile but effective homeless response system, and we need our state leaders to act now in this session. If we don't sustain the gain now, the cost to our counties and emergency systems will far exceed the dollar amount discussed today. This is why I'm very concerned about this budget. We are grateful for the powerful bipartisan work on reallocating $9 million to fill the gap, but it isn't enough. We need money this year. We applaud FHPAP investments to ensure we are ending homelessness before it starts. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list will be Michael Dahl. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with HomeLine, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Thank you, Co-Chair Igo and Co-Chair Howard, for allowing me to testify. HomeLine urges you to the committee to include a $1 million appropriation to the Capacity Building Grants Program in the Omnibus Appropriations Bill. Should these funds become available, HomeLine would apply to fund its statewide and to sustain and strengthen Minnesota's statewide tenant hotline. Since 1992, HomeLine has been a trusted resource for renters when navigating Minnesota's housing system. Over that time, we've assisted over 365,000 Minnesota households, providing free and accessible legal information at critical moments when people are at risk of losing their housing or facing unsafe housing. They are facing eviction notices they don't understand. Their heat is out in the middle of winter. A landlord has changed the locks. A lease was never provided or suddenly changed. A notice is posted on the door that gives them days, not weeks, to figure out where their families will go. For many renters, our hotline is the first and only place they turn. This service is used every day in communities across the state. Without it, thousands of renters would be left to navigate Minnesota's housing laws alone, under intense time pressure and with consequences that can follow them for years. The tenant hotline supports the effectiveness of state investments by helping renters access and understand the systems intended to serve them. When renters have clear information about their rights and responsibilities, they are better positioned to resolve issues, avoid unnecessary displacement. and move them through the legal process with more stability. An investment of $1 million would allow Homeline to maintain and increase staffing levels, reduce wait times, and stabilize service delivery during a period of sustained demand. It would ensure that more renters receive timely and accurate information when it matters most, while also supporting a long-term viable and essential service. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is Dariel Dannon. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks, Chair. And Chair Howard. My name is Dariel Dannon, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. I'm here today to say thank you. I know we had a great hearing last week. We had a number of folks who came and testified just about how critical investments are needed in Greater Minnesota. And also, Representative Norris, I'm sorry, I should have thanked you as well. So a real bipartisan effort here in this committee, bipartisan and statewide effort. And so we just really appreciate it. I think you've heard from mayors, you've heard from business leaders, you've heard from many, many folks that really the lack of housing and the lack of workforce housing is strangling economic growth and opportunity in Greater Minnesota. And so I just really wanted to come here and thank this committee for making investments in that. So thank you again.
Thank you. Next on my list is Lauren Braswell.
Thank you, Co-Chair Igo and Co-Chair Howard. My name's Lauren Braswell, and I'm a retired clinical psychologist, and for 5 years, a volunteer with Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. During my working days, for over 25 years, I had the privilege of serving an evening meal at a homeless shelter with my church. That was valuable service, but no meal I ever served prevented anyone from becoming homeless. That's why I'm here to testify for supportive housing. I'm grateful for the passing of the $9 million of existing dollars for supportive housing, but I'm deeply discouraged that no new funds have been offered to begin to manage the immense gaps created by the funding uncertainty at the federal level. Supportive, affordable housing is a proven solution for homelessness when we provide people with not just a roof over their heads, but mental health care, addiction treatment, job training. Then these individuals can stabilize in their homes, and then this builds a solid bridge to an independent future. Minnesota has been a leader in building out this solution, but this solution is deeply threatened by cuts at the federal level. In Minnesota alone, as you've heard, 5,000 families who are currently housed could lose their homes unless the state steps in with $40 million of new funds for supportive housing. I'd like you to take a minute and picture the children of 5,000 families. Those kids can't be here today to look you in the eye and ask you to help preserve their homes. But I can be here along with many other housing justice advocates. So we appreciate the hard work and leadership you put into this bill, but we would urge you to continue to work to find funding for supportive housing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Last one on my list will be Kelly Law. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Igo, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Law. I'm a senior policy and field building advisor with the Minnesota Consortium of Community Developers. Our members are nonprofit affordable housing developers and providers working across the entire state of Minnesota. They house our local workforces, seniors, families, and people exiting homelessness in need of supportive services. I'm here today to voice my support for House File 1141 as amended. As we know, Minnesota continues to face an extreme housing shortage that impacts communities in every corner of our state. The lack of affordable, stable housing is one of the most pressing barriers to economic mobility, workforce stability, and community health. Our members see this every day, families paying too much for rent, seniors struggling to stay in their homes, and workers unable to live near their jobs. The authorization of $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds is absolutely critical. These bonds are Minnesota's most effective tool for building and preserving affordable housing. This investment will directly increase the supply of homes across the state, especially in communities facing the most significant shortage of affordable and available homes. HIBs have already been used to create more than 10,000 affordable homes, and I'm grateful for this committee's commitment to this crucial resource. We are also grateful for the continued support of proven programs like the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, HECAT, and the Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Development Program. All of these programs help ensure that Minnesotans can pay their rent and find an affordable place to live, while also supporting housing providers and maintaining the stability of our rental housing system. I would also ask this committee to continue to look for unique ways to fund supportive housing services. We know that development of housing is more successful when it's paired with adequate funding for supportive services. I deeply appreciate this committee's work to bring this important bill forward, especially in a year of limited resources, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes members I had signed up for testimony, which means we will move into member discussion. Who would like to go first? Representative Scrava.
You were going to go?
No. I didn't get a chance to comment on Rep. Norris's amendment to that I would support. I mean, it's important that you go from the bottom up. I mean, individual housing is nice, and we spend a lot of money on individual homes, $400,000 or $500,000 each. But it would be nice, that's what it costs. It would be nice to help on the parks. It's kind of a big deal. But overall, this is the second bill today for committees that I sit on going out. This one's actually going to go out. The one in Legacy didn't go out. So this feels good. This feels good. So I hope it goes out. I shouldn't kiss this thing right now, but I hope it goes out. I support it. Thank you. Yes. Which we didn't get at the other meeting.
Thank you for the colorful comments, Representative Scrava. next on my list will be Vice Chair Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Igo. I'll try to be a little more bland in my comments. No, I mean, as anybody knows, the work of the legislature, this is an important moment, and our work will continue forward, and these conversations are really important. I just, you know, am thrilled at the funding that we're putting forward to make sure that Minnesotans have a place to call home with rental, to home ownership. You know, the FHPAP dollars are just critical, as we've been talking, with the skyrocketing evictions and families being just one paycheck away from eviction or foreclosure. And so I just really want to thank our Chair Igo and Chair Howard for the work that you've done. You know, for a long time we've been doing more with less, and the opportunity to be able to do more with more couldn't come at a more critical time. The FHPAP dollars, just, I know Chair Howard mentioned that it's in every 87 counties, also to our tribal nations, and these dollars are for rental and housing payments, utility payments. So just really pleased to see that in here. The HECAT investment, even just that little boost, will really make sure that we're helping folks step up into that dream of home ownership. Also want to call out the fact that we're able to be a little creative as well. And Rep. Zalesnikar's Northern Homegrown Minnesota Nice Home Share is really an important aspect of making sure that people can age in place. So just wanted to call that out. And then obviously the capacity resources, the funding, the supportive housing and housing across the spectrum is something that we're going to continue to grapple and wrestle with and navigate as everybody has been talking about the headwinds that we're facing. But lastly, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm really grateful for the partnership that we've had with Minnesota Housing, and also grateful that we're in a place where we have a really important role as a legislature, and that is oversight and making sure that we're creating those through lines of transparency and maximizing our state investments for road mapping and long-term planning ahead. So I know that can be a little challenging and feel clunky, but I think it's really important work that we're doing, and look forward to the discussion ahead. Last thing I'll just say is, in Ojibwe, we say ndod. So I'm grateful the work that we've done here. Ndod just means a nest or a cocoon, a place to land, and look forward to make sure that fewer Minnesotans are displaced and more have a place to call home. Thank you. Good work, team.
Next on the list is Vice Chair Dotsoff.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Chair, I appreciate you putting this bill together. I think there's been a lot of bipartisan support to get this to where it's at, and this is what legislation should look like. So I appreciate what both you and Representative Igo have put together here today. As we move forward, I'd like to really start looking at, in the future, start looking at how we can address what the real root cause of why people are homeless, and really try to put that at bay as we move forward. I think there's more work we can look at evaluating that in the future. But this is a good bipartisan supported bill, and it's good for greater Minnesota. So I thank you. That's it.
Next on the list is Representative Rehrauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank all of our committee members for this being a great committee to have spent these last 2 years on. I appreciate that we have agreement in general on the importance of housing and having a place to call home, as Vice Chair Kozlowski just talked about. Also, agreement in general on the fact that we have a shortage of housing in Minnesota and how important it is to continue to develop more housing units in our state. And so I just really appreciate all the work we've done. This bill is great. I am so glad that we were able to come to an agreement and provide some of this emergency rental assistance funding, which really is that upstream, catching them before they're homeless, which is the best way to do it. But also the housing infrastructure bonds to build more affordable housing. We got to do the upstream effect, but we also got to catch those that are currently homeless. And so one thing we do know, I appreciate Beacon for being here, that supportive housing is the best way to move folks from long-term homelessness to permanent housing. And those services are just so important for folks to get. And finally, just a thank you to co-chairs Howard and Igo for your bipartisan effort and putting this together. We just really appreciate that you were able to come to agreement. So thank you.
Seeing no one else on my list, I'll make a, oh, Representative Hussein.
You forgot about
me. I'm working with a different CA today.
Throws Benji under the bus. Jeez.
Well, it's, or maybe you're not looking for the left. That's just a joke, and I just want to... my chair. My other chair. And I just want to thank you both. You guys are phenomenal, real leaders. And you guys brought us together and bring a bill that reflect and help for those Minnesotans that really needs help. This bill, I don't know how many people that has been, could become a homeless will prevent. We'll do establish housing. So I do support this because it prevents homelessness and extend access to affordable housing for families across Minnesota. And that's the reason that we got elected. I know today we, Vice Chair Scraba and I did not come out in agreement in one of the, but this is a better committee, and I enjoy being serving for housing, because what it takes, if you don't have a place for you to call home, everything else is fail of life.
There will be no education. There will be no job. You won't have a place for you to live. That's what it started up. And this bill makes critical investment in housing stability, from rental assistance to infrastructure for affordable housing. It's about keeping family housed, support community, and build strong Minnesota. I am very proud of my team, both sides. I'm really emotional about, you know, when we pass something that reflect. I've been getting a lot of calls. People are behind their rental assistance. I mean, their rent or electricity cannot really afford. Metro Search has displaced so many people in our community, in our state. And I want to thank both sites are trying to help for those people that live everywhere in the greater Minnesota, regardless where you live, regardless who you are. Housing has no discrimination. It's everybody's needs. And I want to thank both chairs, vice chairs, and all committees for bringing this forward. Beautiful, wonderful bill.
Well, seeing no further member discussion, I'll make a few comments before I go to you, Co-Chair Howard. No, I appreciate the bill we were able to put together today, and I think thank you to our committee members. I mean, we've had really great discussions in here and gotten to know each other, and I think that's why you have a bill like you do in front of us right now. You know, in the interim, Chair Howard and I had a lot of discussions about things we would have to look at this year, and funding was going to be tight. And I really want to highlight the fact that this bill represents $162.3 million worth of investment into housing and taking care of Minnesota's most vulnerable with zero impact to the general fund. That was the ability that we had when we rolled up our sleeves and found ways to be creative with funding that existed and to put money where it needs to be right now. I've been trying to do back of the napkin math to figure out what the kind of homes this bill is going to build, but rough estimate, we're close to almost 2,000 homes that this bill is going to address. And it's not going to just be in one district. It's not going to be in one county. They're going to be scattered across the state of Minnesota, helping every single community in this state. And I think that's something that this whole committee has a chance to be really proud of, and also emulate as we talk with our colleagues outside of this committee, that in you put the objective and task at hand, and park some of your predisposition feelings that you have on things, you can really find a path to solution. And that's what this bill is. Right, we're taking advantage of a unique opportunity and interest earnings at the agency to invest them in a place that's needed right now. We're using that money to invest in a larger number of HIBs that is a proven way of building homes. We're taking money that was going to default back to the general fund and putting it into a tried and true proven program that catches people before they fall into homelessness, to keep them in a higher quality of life and not perpetuate generational traumas. I mean, members, I'm very proud of this, proud of the collaboration we had. Thank you for our collaboration that, I mean, I think in a time where things are politically tough, to be able to come to this committee and work together and be able to shake hands on a bill that's this good and represents both sides and opinions on things, just couldn't be more proud of it. So thank you to you, Chair Howard, and with that, I'll let you make closing comments on your bill.
I'll just make closing comments, and since this is potentially our last housing hearing, I think I'll just use my closing. It's a really appropriate time to do a lot of thank yous. And reflecting on these 2 years in this housing committee, something that I'm, you know, we entered these 2 years in unprecedented times with this tied legislature at ends, this notion of can we as a body do anything together to address the needs of our state? And in this committee, what I think has really unlocked our ability to together make a lot of progress is that we actually found a way to get to the same place on a few key shared values and shared goals. I mean, I think everybody in these seats shares the value that Minnesotans' lives go better when they can afford a place called home. And I think we also were able to coalesce around some shared goals or shared analysis of the key problem, which is that we don't have enough homes in Minnesota and that we need to build more homes. And throughout these last 2 years, there's certainly our share of differences on approach and emphasis, but I think that grounding in our shared values and our shared goals is what's helped our committee, I think, be a model for how we can work together to actually get things done that move the needle, that improve people's lives. And as a lead in to thank yous, I can't thank you, co-chair Igo, enough. I don't think that we would have got to that place if not for your leadership and for our partnership. I think I shared this last year, you know, when I found out that you were going to be my co-chair, I had to think, like, have I ever had a conversation with Spencer Igo? We had never been on any committees together. I wasn't sure, you know, where you were at on housing or any number of things. But I'm so grateful that you were appointed co-chair and that we were able to work together and lead our committees towards doing impactful things, including in this bill in an incredibly difficult session. And as you said, the amount of good we can do in this bill in this time, I think, just is a feat that we should all be really proud of. And, you know, we've got work to do to get it across, you know. We can't pop any champagne bottles yet, but we're at a really good place to leave the session doing critically important work to help people afford their homes. So thank you, Co-Chair Igo. To thank our members, I first want to thank my vice chair, Representative Kozlowski, who's been my partner in justice on this work in housing all along. I'm just so grateful for the way you've pushed us to be responsive to, especially to the voices that don't normally have a seat at the table, and just taking the attitude that we got to, when we talk about housing, we can't leave a single person behind. And the quality of our work is a testament to that, and I'm just so grateful for your leadership as our vice chair. To my DFL members, we have a lot of members that are new, some members that have been here a couple times. What a great committee we've had. Not only are we better in attendance than we were 2 years ago, we are a team that members are bringing good ideas, key issues to the debate, representing the perspectives of Minnesotans from all across the state. I just can't think of a better team that we've had. Then it've also helped nurture this shared values and shared goals that have led to good outcomes. And to my friends on the other side, you know, we don't agree on everything or most things, but I have always appreciated the debate in this committee that we've been able to again stick towards the things that we're fighting for and those shared values, even if the approaches differ. And I, again, think we've created a model of how things can operate in this committee. To our amazing staff, this committee wouldn't operate on fired on all cylinders without our amazing committee administrator, Benji Brinks. Truly, everything that is happening, I feel like, would not, without Benji at the helm, kind of making sure that this train is running. And we couldn't be more grateful. The state couldn't be more grateful. This committee couldn't be more grateful for Benji's leadership as our committee administrator. Our incredible partisan staff, Molly Peterson, who's been on Team Housing for a good stretch, leading the charge in research. Our new committee legislative assistant, Jonathan Smith, who stepped right in, has been firing on all cylinders. We have incredible nonpartisan staff, Katrina Highmark, who's really helped us on the fiscal elements of this, especially in this tricky year more than anything. Just been so grateful to Katrina and Justin, who just our nonpartisan staff, just absolutely know this stuff backwards and forwards and are an amazing resource to help all of us execute the kind of things we want. Our great GOP staff, Lori Cousineau, and Luke LeBron. We've just had a great working relationship. And then lastly, to all the members of the public and groups that have been such an amazing source of grounding us in the work we need to do in this committee. That's the other thing I think we've done well, is make sure that we center the voices of Minnesotans in all our work. So there's just too many people to thank, but kind of as I said, we are in these seats because we believe that we have an ability to improve people's lives. And in no place is that more, do I feel that more than in making sure that people can afford and be safe in their homes. And that's what we're doing in this bill. That's what we've done for 2 years. It's been an honor to be a co-chair of this committee and would encourage members to vote yes on this bill. It'd be a bummer if you didn't after that big, long speech. So please vote yes.
With that, Chair Howard renews his motion that House File 1141, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 1141, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Nonpartisan staff are directed to make any technical corrections as needed.
Co-chair, I missed one thank you. I knew I would, but I missed thanking Betsy Ritzler, our committee legislative assistant for the GOP as well.
Awesome. Well, and like I said, I guess I'll let you come back up here, but I'll make some closing comments that I get over to my chair as well. Well, I guess if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I'll make closing comments if any other members want to.
Please
as well.
Do. Please do. Yeah.
You know, the fun part about having co-chairs means all staff and members get double the thank yous,
yeah.
Which they frankly always deserve.
Gotcha.
So, but to reiterate, thank you again to our nonpartisan staff, to our partisan staff. It's been really fantastic. We've kind of all just been one gigantic team, whether it's been I need something, or Chair Howard needs something. We've been intermingling and working together to make sure things get done on time and we have a meaningful committees and we're on schedule and getting things done. So thank you to everyone who's been a part of that. Thank you to our members for really great discussions and building a lot of, I think, really good relationships that I think in some ways I've seen expand outside this committee into other issues, which is what being a part of the legislature is all about. And that's why we're all here. And I think that the state of the world right now and state of politics, committees like these are things that all of us needed. And our experiences here, I know I share them back home in my district, but I also share them with colleagues that we serve with, because this is what I think is at a core of meaning to be a legislator, is when you can come here and pass good bills, have real discussion, make real compromise, that's going to result in amazing things that are going to establish a better Minnesota, which is what we're all here for. Like I said earlier before, too, thank you to you, Chair Howard. Likewise, we hadn't chatted before I became a chair either, but we got to know each other really quick, and I think, too, that collaboration, I think it's an example that we can set moving forward with. I don't think we're always going to be a tie here in the Minnesota House. I hope we're not always in a tie in the Minnesota House. But sometimes I think things happen to be a teaching moment for that, whether my side's in the majority, whether I'm in the minority, and vice versa. We remember experiences like these and how we can find ways to work together and get things done that make sure that all people in Minnesota are heard and all voices are heard. And I think it's something that all of us in this committee can look back on and remember in a really powerful way. I know it's something that I'm going to hold really close because it was an honor and a privilege to be able to chair a committee and one like this where we're really making a difference. So, again, thank you to all members on my side, on the DFL side, all of our staff. To all the testifiers, all the people, and all those that came to this committee with ideas and helped us and sat in our offices. I wish we could say we fixed all the problems. We might have put a dent in them, but the work continues. And we're going to get there all together. And again, just thank you to everyone.
Unless anyone else has anything for the good of the order, I will, I just need to, that's it, right? Yeah, we're done, guys. So, and get... So, sorry, that concludes our business for the day, and this committee stands adjourned to the call of the chair.